Dasu Ghosh Prabhu suggested that I speak in English, as there are quite a few devotees here who don't know Hindi. Basu Ghosh Prabhu ka sujao hai ki mai angrezi mein pravachan karunga. Kyunki hamare beech kafi Hindi na bolne wale hai. So, what should I do? Chunav, who's for English party? English, who wants in English? But they all understand Hindi. Kon hai jo hamare beech jo angrezi bilkul nahi samajhte aapka hat uthaye. Sharam ki baat nahi hai. Kaun main? All right then. Aaj kal Bharat mein agar koi angrezi nahi jante hai usko नीच जैसे माना. वास्तव में जो कृष्ण नहीं जानते वो नीच है. चैतन्य महाप्रभु ने कहा, जय भजय श्री भरो, जय कृष्ण, जो कृष्ण का भजन कहते वे बड़ा है. अभक्त हीन छा, अभक्तों हीन और छा मतलब चरण का. सो ऑल राइट, एज इफ आई स्पीक इन इंग्लिश देन जो हिंदी में अंग्रेजी अनुवाद करने वाला था तो अंग्रेजी से हिंदी अनुवाद करने वाला होगा. ठीक है, यू आर गोइंग टू ट्रांसलेट. एंड लेडीज के लिए, देवियों के लिए एक, आई एम गोइंग टू स्पीक इन इंग्लिश. सो लेडीज, वो क्या हिंदी शब्द या इंग्लिश शब्द? देवियों आप आपस में व्यवस्था करो अनुवाद के लिए. ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 8 texts 24 and 25, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. These texts are not verses as such, they're in prose. It means there's no rhyming meter. So I'll just speak them and give the translation. Text 24. Api svidasau bhagavan urupatir enang mrigapati bhayan mrita matarang mrigabalakam svashrama paribhrashtamanukampaya kripanajana batsala paripati. Translation. Maharaj Bharat continued to speak like a madman. Seeing above his head the dark marks on the rising moon which resembled a deer, he said, "Can it be that the moon, who is so kind to an unhappy man, might also be kind upon my deer, knowing that it has strayed from home and has become motherless? This moon has given the deer shelter near itself just to protect it from the fearful attacks of a lion." Text 25. King Vatmaja Vishlesha Jvara Dava Dahana Shikabhir Upatapyamana Hridaya Sthala Nalini Kang Mam Upasritam Rigi Tanayang Shishira Shantanuraga Gunita Nijabadana Salilamrita Maya Gabhastibhi Svadhayatiti Cha. After perceiving the moonshine, Maharaj Bharat continued speaking like a crazy person. He said, "The deer's son was so submissive and dear to me that due to its separation, I am feeling separation from my own son. Due to the burning fever of this separation, I am suffering as if inflamed by a forest fire. My heart, which is like the lily of the land, is now burning. Seeing me so distressed, the moon is certainly splashing its shining nectar upon me, just as a friend throws water on another friend who has a high fever. In this way, the moon is bringing me happiness." I hope you have the book to translate from, because that would be very difficult to translate for most people, unless you had the if you have the book to read from, it's much easier. Purport. According to Ayurvedic treatment, it is said that if one has a high fever, someone should splash him with water after gargling this water. In this way, the fever subsides. Although Bharat Maharaj was very aggrieved due to the separation of his so-called son, the deer, he thought that the moon was splashing gargled water on him from its mouth, and that this water would subdue his high fever, which was raging due to separation from the deer. So as you have probably already ascertained, I'm not speaking this morning particularly on the subject of Rath Yatra. I'm giving a regular talk on Srimad Bhagavatam. Sripad Lokanath Maharaj is scheduled to speak here at 10 to 12 on the subject of Rath Yatra. These texts which we have just read describe how Maharaj Bharat spoke like a madman. And actually, the ultimate goal of the instruction of Srimad Bhagavatam, which means, because Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost instruction, it's Nigama Kalpataro Galitam Palam. It is the ripened fruit of the desire tree of Vedic knowledge. In other words, Srimad Bhagavatam gives the highest instruction. And the most important instruction we learn from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the personification of the Bhagavatam, Krishna himself. In the mood of a devotee, we learn from him, as he learned it from his guru, that the essence of the Bhagavatam is this verse, which I'll try and remember now. Evam vrata sripriya nama kirtya jatanuraga chitta drutta uchai hasatyato rodati roti gayati unmadavan richati lokabhayaha. Which means that a person who is absorbed in love of Krishna, he chants the name of the Lord who is very dear to him. Sometimes laughing, sometimes crying, sometimes shouting, sometimes rolling on the ground, completely like a madman, without caring for public opinion or what others think of him. So this is the ultimate goal, to be a madman in love of Krishna. There's another kind of madman which is mentioned also several times in Srimad Bhagavatam. That is not a very desirable madness. As Rishabdev The father of Bharat Maharaj told Bharat Maharaj and the others that Nunang Pramata Guru Tevi Karma Yat Indriya Pritya Aprinoti Na Sadhu Manya Yata Atmano Yam Asanapi Klesha Da Asadeha. Certainly, Rishabdev said, people are mad who perform sinful activities for the sake of sensual pleasure, which causes them to be born again and again and to suffer again and again. So there are two kinds of madness. When one is so absorbed in love of Krishna that one becomes, well, what does madness mean? It means to be practical. Well, one kind of madness is to be unaware of everything going on around us, just absorbed in one's own thoughts. So one kind of madness is the madness of love of Krishna. And another kind of madness is, it may not appear to be madness because everyone is cooperating and living in this world in a manner which might seem to be very sane and normal. Mad means severe deviation from the normal, from normally expected behavior. If someone is a little bit unusual, we may call them eccentric. I don't know the Hindi word for eccentric. Tora pagal, I guess you could say. Little bit mad. But if they're completely dysfunctional, they can't function in human society, then they're just considered completely mad. So Bharat Maharaj is a great devotee. So we might think that, well, his madness, it must be the madness of love of God. And it was for the madness of love of God to pursue that, to attempt to attain that, that he left his kingdom. Just like the description of the Bhagavatam is quite graphic. That he left his home and wife and kingdom and treasury and ministers and elephants and opulence just as someone leaves stool after passing it. Of course, nowadays, after passing stool, one may keep it and use it for medical examination. So it's not always here. In the purport, it's not always that one may give up a stool. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada speaks about Ayurvedic treatment. So in Ayurvedic treatment, as far as I know, examination of stool is not one of the major processes. Examination of the pulse, that is a major process. But the general example is that stool is just... You just leave it, and then you don't think, oh, my stool, I left it behind. You're quite happy to leave it behind. So one should leave one. Bharat Maharaj, he left his home, his wife, his family, to pursue Krishna consciousness. And that might be considered mad by some people. Even up to the present time, we find in our Krishna consciousness movement, when someone wants to dedicate their life fully for Krishna, many people will call him mad. And especially in America, in the 1980s, beginning in the 1970s, when Srila Prabhupada was present, there was a very strong movement, a nationally famous and prominent movement, to stop young people joining the Krishna consciousness movement. saying that they had become brainwashed. They had become mad. Why should they leave their nice American life to follow some funny Indian sect that was considered mad? When Srila Prabhupada was told that the devotees were being charged in court with brainwashing, he said, yes, our movement is a brainwashing movement. Your brain is full of stool. It requires to be washed. He said, actually, we're not brainwashing, we're brain giving. You have no brain. The Prabhupada responded very aggressively, even though he was at that time physically quite sick, apparently. But he became very enlivened. He thought, oh, it's a court, very good, national court case, very good. Very good publicity, Srila Prabhupada thought. And we will bring as evidence all our books. And all the judge and the prosecutors and the jury, they all have to read all of Prabhupada's books. Then they can judge. Otherwise it's not fair. You can't judge. To judge someone's book as being wrong without reading it is, by any standard of justice, if there is any justice, wrong. So, Bharat Maharaj, to materialistic people, appeared to be mad. From the point of view of the Bhagavatam, he was sane, most sane, because he was attempting to become mad after Krishna. But the madness that is described here is not madness of love of Krishna. It's madness of love of a fawn, which whoever's translating, if you don't know what that means, fawn is the English word for a baby deer. And the feelings that he had for Krishna, they had largely become transferred to the deer. He's speaking here in very poetic language. So Krishna should be described in poetic language. Krishna is known as Uttama Shloka. All the best verses are in glorification of Krishna. Vyasadeva has composed so many verses in glorification of Krishna. Brahma has composed, Shiva has composed. And it is the natural function of the purified soul to glorify Krishna. That is called kirtan. So even though there are so many verses of glorification of Krishna, still there are more and more always being composed. The very famous in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya is the Stotra Ratna of Sri Yamuna Acharya. That's just one example of many beautiful prayers glorifying Krishna. There are also many mundane poets who are inspired with a similar sentiment and who glorify, usually they glorify a woman or the beauty of nature. They may glorify their country, what they think to be their country. So they use their poetic skills to glorify that which is mundane. And it may be from the poetic point of view, it may be very good poetry also. Even in Sanskrit, some of the most famous poets, they may take up some mundane themes, just like Nala Damayanti, which although it's from Mahabharata, but it's a mundane story. So Bharat Maharaj has become a madman. Even from the point of view of the so-called sane people who are mad actually, because they're not Krishna conscious. Even from the point of view of sane people, he might appear to be mad. Because for a human to express so much devotion to a fawn, it's a bit too much, even by ordinary consideration. Although in the present time it's almost considered desirable or even praiseworthy in the Western countries, especially in America and Britain, to be very strongly attached to a dog. People think that's something very good. More than once in America, I've had the experience of people coming up to me and shoving their little dog in my face and saying, "Oh, what a nice dog." And I'm supposed to say, "Yes, how nice." And they can't understand when I'm not impressed. One woman, she had the dog and she said, "Oh, you see, this just came to me just after my mother died," as if it's some kind of spiritual event, that after she was lamenting for her mother dying and the dog came in her life, as if some avatar. It's crazy, but they think it's something almost spiritual to love their dog. This is madness. Why is it madness? It seems very good and pure. You see, I love my dog. There's nothing, I don't get anything out of it. It's just, I love to pet my dog and my dog licks me and I feel so nice and there's a nice exchange of love. But it's not pure. It may seem to be very good, very good and very... What was wrong with it before? This is madness. This is madness. Fixing something when there was nothing wrong, it's another kind of madness. Hare Krishna. So to be attached to anything in this material world is madness, because it causes... Well, there are various reasons for that. One reason is because our real relationship is with Krishna. Now, that doesn't mean we can't have relationships with others, including dogs, although we don't particularly recommend making relationships with dogs. But Krishna is the center. Krishna is that perfect person who can reciprocate fully with everyone. And there's no end to that. There's no end to that means that any relationship in this material world is ultimately terminated by time. By following Vedic processes, it is possible that husband and wife can, even after death, join together again. So that might go on for some lifetimes, but not eventually it will break, because that is the nature of relationships in this material world. As described in Bhagavatam, and it's a common example, just as twigs floating in a river may join together in a group for some time, but in course of time they will again become separated, either by the current of the river, or they hit a stone in the river, or for whatever reason. And they may separate, and then again an individual twig may join with other twigs to join another group, or even some twigs may again come together, but there's no... In the river of time, there's always separation. So real love is for Krishna. That is the point. And it is madness to have any other any aspiration for any other kind of love. Now that doesn't mean that a devotee doesn't relate with others. A devotee does relate with others. But the center is Krishna. Real kindness, compassion, love, good feelings, that's all centered on Krishna. So if we can direct someone toward Krishna, that is the best thing that we can do for them. That is the best expression of good feeling. We may have good feeling for someone and therefore try to help them materially by feeding the hungry, clothing the semi-clad or unclad or poorly clad, by giving medical care to the sick. These are considered praiseworthy activities in human society. But actually that is just the duty of people to help each other in human society. It's not particularly praiseworthy to help others on the material platform, but it is blameworthy if we fail to do so. And in human society, according to the Vedic system, the system given by Krishna, Varnashram system, there is a division of labor. So it's not that everyone does everything. For instance, the potter makes pots. The barber doesn't make pots, and nor does the potter shave people or cut their nails. Everyone has a specific duty. Now, in the modern age, in India, in Hindu society, for want of a better term, there is an idea that it is the duty of sadhus, people who are like Bharat Maharaj, they have left home to pursue spiritual life. It is their duty to perform social welfare activities. It seems that this idea came from Vivekananda, who picked it up from the Western missionaries and his own visit to... Please don't blind me with this. His own visit to America, where he saw that the Christians are much engaged in social welfare activities. There's one recorded instruction of Jesus and his own personal example to help the sick, to tend to the sick. Jesus gave a personal example, and by his precept also, by his spoken instruction, he put a lot of emphasis on doing good to others on the bodily platform. So it seems that Vivekananda picked that up, and then he started the Ramakrishna mission. Notice the word mission. That word is an English word, obviously, which the taking a cue from the Christian missionaries who perform medical work, welfare work, social welfare work, and then gradually gaining people's confidence that they are their well-wishers, then they try to convert them to Christians. So with this idea, Vivekananda spawned his very offensive idea of Daridra Narayan and Manava Seva is Madhava Seva. So that at the present time, it's considered among Hindus that it's the duty of saintly persons, sadhus, to have hospitals and schools and feed the poor. to perform social welfare work. Now, previously, that hospitals, well, Srila Prabhupada said in ancient India, there's no record of so much emphasis on hospitals. And Srila Prabhupada said, why? Because people were less on the bodily platform. They were, and practically, I saw that in my youth, traveling in the villages, Hindu villages mostly of Bangladesh, that people would get sick and that largely they're just tolerated, that's all. It's not like nowadays, if someone has an itch in their toe, immediately they go to the doctor. For every little thing, they need to get some. And also people knew how to look after their bodies and natural home remedies. The doctor was the grandmother, mostly. As far as schools are concerned, well, sadhus, yes, brahmanas, they would run schools. But with a very different concept to the schools of today, which are meant for producing robot-like people who think that to get a job and a career is the goal of life. So schools were there, especially boys who were to be brahmanas, they were very intensely educated in Vedic knowledge. Kshatriya boys also had intense education, but more in the fighting skills, administration. Srila Prabhupada often refers to Kshatriyas as warriors and administrators. But by administrators, we should understand rulers, not bureaucrats. The bureaucrat, that was the job of the kayasta, not that they're doing office work. But the Kshatriyas, they're ruling, taking decisions, enforcing decisions, overseeing. They might not be involved in the nitty-gritty. And some of the administrative function was also done by brahmanas, especially legal cases. And legal cases, they were dealt with within the caste. Anyway, I'm getting a bit off subject here. The point is that the brahmanas, they would give education. But not that education means you have to put 5 lakhs down to get your child in, get the seat, and then pay. I was just told by one devotee in Gurgaon, Haryana, that his daughter is going, it's not even school, it's preschool. And it's 1 lakh a year, basic fees, just to go to some play school, where they indoctrinate them in. Because I saw there was a photo of her holding an Indian national flag, and they indoctrinate them in Mera Bharat Mahan, my India's great, which is nonsense. I know that you might not like to hear that, but actually it is nonsense, because it's not your Bharat, and it's all in imagination. This whole idea of countries is a modern imagination. There was no such thing. Of course, we find in Shastra that Bharat is the most important place in the universe, but not as a geopolitical entity, but as a place of spiritual culture. Otherwise, there were so many kingdoms, and the borders may change, and no one cared that much either. Only the kings, they would worry, they would fight among themselves and this and that. The ordinary people, they didn't care so much. Whoever's in power, you have to give them your taxes, that's it, finished. It's not... What I was getting at, the welfare work of schools, hospitals, feeding the poor, that again, that's the Kshatriya job. He takes taxes taxes in grains, and he stores grains, so that in a time of famine, he distributes the grains. It's the Kshatriya's duty to see that no one goes hungry. That's the job of the government. In the modern age, there are governments. So it's the job of the government to see that no one goes hungry. But people think that it is the job of the sadhus, because the sadhus are supposed to be good people and nice people and they help others. Well, that's true, but how they help them? Actually, everyone is supposed to help others. That's the meaning of society. Everyone helps everyone else. Everyone has this, just like the barber, helps someone by shaving them, cutting their nails. He has certain functions in weddings, so he helps. But that's, it's his dharma to do so. That is his prescribed duty to do so. The brahmana helps others by teaching others, by performing sacrifices for them, or pujas for them, or different functions of brahmanas. Some of them are astrologers. So there are different functions in which the brahmanas bless others. In this way they contribute to society. So everyone is supposed to contribute to society. It's just what everyone does. Although in the modern age, the idea is that everyone is an individual who's trying to get the most he can out of society for his own benefit. So the whole ethic of society has changed so that everyone's just trying to make themselves big and rich and prestigious. And so if someone does try to help others, that's considered, oh, very saintly. But actually everyone's supposed to. Everyone's supposed to do that as their natural function in society. Now there are so many misunderstandings that when we read the Bhagavatam or hear the topics of Bhagavatam, we may do so through our own misunderstanding. We may, for instance, think that Bharat Maharaj was protecting a deer, so we should also protect deers or donkeys or something like this. Although Shastra speaks about Goraksha. Several times Srila Prabhupada in his lectures, he speaks about Goraksha, cow protection, and says, we're not interested in pig raksha or dog raksha, specifically cows. Now, the cows especially, there are various reasons. One reason is because they're very dear to Krishna. Another reason is very practical. They give milk, which is very valuable for nourishing the brain cells, which are suitable for spiritual advancement. They enhance sattva gun if taken in moderation. It's not that by drinking 10 liters of milk a day, you'll become more sattvic or more spiritual. You'll just get diarrhea. But the cow gives milk, which gives ghee, which is needed for sacrifice, yajna. And milk in Ayurveda, unless specifically stated otherwise, means cow's milk. Of course, there are other animals which give milk. Even our own mother gave us milk, we hope. Nowadays, maybe not. Maybe just the powdered milk in a bottle. But the mother gives milk, the donkey gives milk, the buffalo gives milk, the pig gives milk, but special importance is given to the cow. So we should understand all these points very well. Srila Prabhupada, we find in his purports and his personal preaching, he personified the principle given in the beginning of Bhagavatam, reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of others. Because with the progress of Kali Yuga, we say progress, that means chronological progress. Otherwise, in terms of human society, it's not progress. What they call progress is regress. With the progress of Kali Yuga, there's so many wrong ideas. Anyway, in human society, it's all wrong ideas. Nunang pramatha kurute become. Everyone's mad with the wrong idea of trying to enjoy this world. But with Kali Yuga, it becomes more intense. We find that by the inspiration in the Bhagavatam, so many people in the past used to leave home following the example of Bharat Maharaj, following the example of Yudhishthira and the Pandavas, which is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, leaving home for the sake of becoming Krishna conscious. But even after doing that and practicing Krishna consciousness, they might not get the desired result because they don't have a clear idea of what the desired result is. They have a mixed understanding of Krishna consciousness. Practically, we can see in India today, as Srila Prabhupada said, the people in India are naturally Krishna conscious. And actually that's become more so due to Srila Prabhupada's preaching through his International Society for Krishna Consciousness. There's a natural tendency to be Krishna conscious. But that doesn't mean that everyone in India is a pure devotee. Otherwise there wouldn't be any need of preaching here. As I remember very well, many years ago in Bangladesh, we met one famous preacher. Not famous. Here in Gujarat, no one ever heard of him, unless they're Bengali. It's just like in Bengal, no one ever heard of Swami Narayan Sampradaya. So in Bengal, there was a famous preacher, this Mahanamrata Brahmachari. So we met him in one village. Somehow our paths crossed. He was traveling and preaching. You heard of Mahanamrata? You never heard of him? Bengali Haleo. So probably his influence didn't reach all the way out to Nagaland. He had many mostly his followers were in Calcutta and in Faridpur. And in other places also. In Bangladesh, it seems he was more popular in Bangladesh. Anyway, because he didn't like us and we didn't like him, he knew that before we met him. We were competitors to him because we were going everywhere and telling people, if you want to be a Vaishnava, then the first thing you have to stop eating fish. And he had so many disciples who were eating fish. He never told them not to eat fish. And people start to think about it. Well, our guru, he says it's okay to eat fish. Then your guru is bogus. So this was coming back to him and he immediately accosted us. Why are you preaching here? There's already so much Krishna consciousness here. Why don't you go back to your own country and preach there? So the immediate reply came. I didn't reply. God brother mine replied that, there's so much Krishna consciousness here, but there's no clear idea of what is actually Krishna consciousness. And that is widely true here in India today. We're here in Baroda today. If things go as they've been going for the last so many years, we'll see literally lakhs of people. Police estimate is about 2 lakhs every year. People turn out to have darshan of Jagannath. They're all very happy. They're all partaking in bhakti. They all have a natural attraction to Krishna. But, they may not all be going back to Godhead. They may not even have any idea of going back to Godhead. Or even if they were informed, they may not be very eager to do so. Because although from previous lives, they have that feeling of attraction to Krishna. But that is mixed with so many material desires and misunderstandings. Most people, if you offer them some material reward, that you can either get, you can win the lottery and win what? What's the lottery? How much can you win on the lottery? 1 crore, 2 crores? Any idea? Anyone? No one. Okay, let's say theoretically. You can win the lottery 2 crores, or you can have pure love of Krishna. They'll take the lottery. They may even think I already have love of Krishna. You see, I come out to Rath Yatra and say Jai Jagannath and explode some fireworks. They may think they already got it. They may say, well, I'll take the 2 crores and I'll give 2 lakhs to the temple. Or they'll come and have darshan of Jagannath, and at Ganesh Puja they'll worship Sai Ganesh, deity of Ganesh with a head of Sai Baba. So all mixed up ideas. Now, there are different ways of preaching Krishna consciousness in this situation. One way is to, or one side is to encourage people's feeling of devotion to Krishna. So we can tell stories about Krishna and Jagannath and make people feel very good. Oh yes, very nice. And that will cultivate their feeling, very nice. So we have kirtans, they can come and join, and they like to do kirtan, and they make spiritual progress by doing so. But if they don't learn that serving Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna, is categorically different to worshipping Ganesh. It's categorically different. The pleasure that you get from chanting Hare Krishna is should be in a different category to the pleasure that you get from watching a cricket match or playing in a cricket match. In other words, they should be taught to distinguish reality from illusion. Reality is Krishna consciousness. In their misunderstanding, Krishna consciousness, or they, of course they don't use that word, but Krishna bhakti is just part of their life, which revolves around earning money, family, personal prestige. Some people are interested in personal prestige. Everyone, some people more than others. So unless they're taught that Krishna consciousness, to be fully Krishna conscious, is the only goal of life, not just something in our life, then they will have to continue to revolve in repeated birth and death. Therefore, simply to tell stories of Krishna and make people feel good and nice, it may be some kind of help to them, but it may simultaneously be harmful to them, in as much as they think that they're becoming more spiritual without actually understanding what it means to become spiritual. Spiritual means, first of all, one has to distinguish between spiritual and material activities. It's not all the same. You have to understand what is beneficial for advancement in Krishna consciousness and what isn't. Otherwise, one may go to Rath Yatra, even chant 16 rounds, even be initiated in ISKCON. But not, if one doesn't have a clear understanding of why we're doing all these things and what is the nature of spiritual attachment, which means to Krishna? And what is the nature of material attachment? To a deer, or to one's own family members, or whatever. Unless we understand that difference and cultivate attraction to Krishna, instead of cultivating attraction to anything else, then our bhakti will never properly develop. It will remain on the material platform. And we may think, well, that's just something to teach people in the beginning. But actually we see here Bharat Maharaj, even after coming to a high level of advancement, again became attracted to the mundane. Now one reason for that, we could say, is there was no one to tell him, hey, look, you're in Maya. What are you doing becoming so attached to this deer? So it's very helpful to keep association of devotees who will point out to us what is to be done and what is not to be done. We should be ready to take that guidance also. Because otherwise, if we think that, well, Krishna consciousness just means being nice to each other, so you don't tell others what they need to, you don't tell others that what they need to hear. Just like the doctor, the patient may have some serious disease, but oh, I don't want to make him feel bad. So just tell him, oh, it's no problem, you just take some aspirin. But actually he needs chemotherapy, which is a very heavy No, I don't want to disturb him. So I'll just tell him, you just take some aspirin. But if he needs heavy treatment, then it's the doctor's duty to give it. Hare Krishna. Any question about this, please? Yeah. Is there another mic? So you can, otherwise you have to come up here. Or just, you have quite a strong voice, so speak loudly and I'll repeat it. The duty of the general public? Yeah, it's a general, it's in Vedic society, and probably in pretty much all pre-industrial consumer societies, it wasn't considered something very holy to help others, it was just considered normal. I'll just give another example in that regard. In the culture that I was raised in, if you ever do anything for anyone, now, if anyone does something, you have to say thank you. But in Indian, one thing I noticed when I first came to India, I'd say thank you, thank you, thank you. And people would become a little, maybe a little upset by saying thank you. In England, if you don't say thank you, I get that every time I go from India to England and I don't say thank you, and people get upset. Why don't you say thank you? They think it's very rude. But in India, I had the experience that they become a little upset and they say, oh, it's my duty. In other words, if you say thank you, that means someone has done something extra for you. But if someone helps you, gives you directions or gives you a glass of water or whatever, and you say thank you, no, it's my duty. In other words, why would you think that I wouldn't do it? Do you think I'm such a low person that I wouldn't help you? Of course, I must help you, it's my duty. Duty, by the way, is common translation of dharma. One of the translations of dharma. Yeah. Beggars, professional beggars. Ask, what's that guy's name? Kejriwal. In Delhi. He has a program to clear all beggars out of Delhi. What's his first name? What should be the response to beggars? Keep a little prasad, give them a little prasad. That's the best thing. Tell them to say Hare Krishna, give them a little prasad.
say that worshipping Ganesh is different from worshipping Krishna.
I said that worshipping Ganesh is different from worshipping Krishna. Not only did I say it, but it's actually a fact.
So, recently I heard some pastime of Jagannath in which...
You heard a pastime of Jagannath in which Jagannath is dressed in Ganesh Vish. It's around this time of year, I believe. Is that at the Snan Yatra or something like that? At the Snan Yatra, he's dressed in Ganesh dress. That's a relatively recent innovation. It may be, but still it doesn't. If Krishna decides to, for his pastime, take the form of Ganesh, it still doesn't mean that Ganesh became Krishna. If you in a drama play the role of Hiranyakashipu, it doesn't mean that you've become Hiranyakashipu, and we're going to call Nrisimhadev to rip you to pieces, literally. This is mixed up, Mayavadi way of thinking. Looks like you're thinking of another question there. All right. They do social work, and Christian missionaries try to do social work and convert the people. Oh, that's another point that just came to mind. In their understanding, social work is the work of Jesus. Because Jesus is recorded as saying, I can't remember now, it's something, you have to help the sick, you have to help the poor. So because they don't understand the difference between the soul and the body, and they have this very strange idea that you only have one lifetime, and then you either go to heaven or you go to hell forever. So it's all based on their very wrong ideas, but they actually think that it's completely religious. And this Vivekananda, then he brought in this idea of Manava Seva is Madhava Seva, which is actually a Christian idea. Oh, that's right, I remember now from my childhood. When Jesus was asked, how can you serve God? And he said that you serve the poorest and the most downtrodden of the people. And that is serving God. So that then you get the Daridra Narayan idea and this and that. Yeah. Can you yukta vairagya? Can you use welfare work as a kind of preaching? Yeah, it's you can do anything for preaching. Although we have to be careful. We have to be careful because if we start to emphasize social welfare work. Oh, that's a big topic now. Instead of going to... This is what's actually happening in our society today, that devotees who join the movement for the sake of serving Krishna and preaching Krishna consciousness, they're sent out to collect for feeding the poor and helping children to get a good meal in the school and the hospital. So they're, day after day... They're saying what people want to hear, so that the people give money, and the people have the impression that our movement is something like the Ramakrishna Mission. They have a good impression, but for the wrong reason. They don't understand why our movement is good. And our own members, by speaking again and again and again, they also start to think that our real work is opening hospitals and schools and all this kind of thing. So it is dangerous. I heard from Giriraj Maharaj, who was the temple president in Bombay when Prabhupada was there, and Prabhupada personally spent time, a lot of time there. So he said that practically every day someone would come to Prabhupada with a proposal. Why don't you open a hospital, clinic, school, Prabhupada every day just say, no, that's not our work. So it's not impossible. Srila Prabhupada also had this ISKCON food relief, where there's a huge influx of refugees in West Bengal from Bangladesh. So Srila Prabhupada had mass prasad distribution at Mayapur. So Srila Prabhupada wasn't against that. But and he said that will be good publicity. He said actually people will like that. But he never emphasized it as he emphasized, for instance, especially book distribution. And he said that the American government and the Canadian government, they're willing to give grains, so why don't we take them, we can cook them and distribute them. It's a big discussion, but the bottom line is that we should maintain our identity as a fully spiritual movement, not that we are callous toward the material sufferings of others, but we should also know that the real best way we can help others is by giving them spiritual benefit. And if there's an emergency, just like that, so many refugees, then we can also, as Prabhupada did from his temples, from Mayapur, he distributed prasad. He actually said not to go out to an emergency area. He said, people can come to our temple for prasad. Anyway, it's a big discussion. I'm sure if there were others here, they'd give another side of the story. But as far as I have studied Srila Prabhupada's instructions, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's also, he was very strong on this point also. Because he was living at a time just after Vivekananda, and the influence of the Ramakrishna Mission was very prominent in Bengal, as it is now. So Hare Krishna, everyone please take prasad, and Sripad Lokanath Maharaj is scheduled to speak on Rath Yatra from 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock. If you want to help the poor and the downtrodden, etc., etc., we can help with preaching in the tribal areas. We have a group of devotees in Tapi district who are from what is called the Adivasi background. Oh, I just said your name, Maharaj. Jai Jai. Chirayu, Chirayu. Anyway, I'm no one to bless you. So you could go there. They're asking devotees. They don't even need monetary donations so much, but they'd like association of devotees. They come regularly to Rath Yatra here. There were two buses came to Navsari. Here you are. There's your contact right there. So you can preach to them also. Another way of thinking is, anyway, who's high, who's low? As jivas, we're all the same. It's only in one birth someone becomes a rich man, someone becomes a poor man, someone becomes a dog or a cat. That's another consideration. Okay, so Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Oh. Abhi. Aayi hai, aaj ki nari kal ki sanskriti. Nai pustak, Hindi mein. Nai matlab, abhi, is kshan mein. Sava pratam upalabdhe. Not that it's such a great thing, but anyway, you can announce it.